Welcome to another podcast of ArmageddonLetters.com, a virtual time machine back to the moment when the world was nearly destroyed in late October 1962. You can follow us also on Twitter at ArmageddonTweet. I'm Jim Blake.
And I'm Janet Lang.
Today we'd like to talk about one of the letters that's referred to in the title of our book, the Armageddon Letters. And I think in our view, if you understand this letter, next week, next year, 10 years from now, if you really grasp the significance of this letter, what's going on in this letter, you will understand why we think it might be the most valuable piece of correspondence or the most valuable piece of literature to come out of the entire Cold War. Fidel Castro writes to Nikita Khrushchev a letter sent at around 7 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on October 27, 1962, from Havana, Cuba, by cable to Moscow.
Dear Comrade Khrushchev, from an analysis of the situation and the reports in our possession, I consider that the aggression is almost imminent within the next 24 to 72 hours. There are two possible variants. The first and the likeliest one is an attack against certain targets with the limited objective of destroying them. The second, less probable, although possible, is invasion. You can rest assured that we will firmly and resolutely resist attack, whatever it may be. The morale of the Cuban people is extremely high, and the aggressor will be confronted heroically. Fraternally yours, Fidel Castro. So Khrushchev actually gets a note from his ambassador in Cuba, Ambassador Alexeyev, who is with Castro all this time writing the letter. Just so that there's no ambiguity about the situation, Alexeyev sends Khrushchev a cable. And the cable says to Khrushchev that if the expected U.S. invasion begins, Fidel is asking Khrushchev to, quote, wipe them off the face of the earth. When Khrushchev receives this letter, this note, his response is, quote, this is insane.
Let's just see what this says here. Fidel Castro is in a bunker underneath the Soviet embassy in Havana with Alexander Alexeyev. Janet just mentioned the Soviet ambassador. And he's trying to figure out how to tell Khrushchev that the Cubans are ready to fight. They're ready to resist the American invasion and air attack, which Castro regards as about 95% probable at this point, according to this cable from Alexeyev that Janet mentioned. Now, what he appeared to Khrushchev to be saying, we think, is that plain and simple, I want you, Nikita Khrushchev, to nuke the United States ASAP and destroy them once and forever. As he says, it would be a harsh and terrible solution, but there really is no other solution to this problem. And as Janet pointed out, when Khrushchev gets this, he goes apoplectic because he's never thought about using these weapons. These weapons that he put in Cuba, to him, are not to use at all. They're chess pieces in the big board called Cold War. And he's moving his chess pieces around so that he gets Kennedy's attention. But Castro is of the opinion that the American attack is unavoidable and that the American attack, moreover, not irrationally, since nuclear weapons are the cause of this crisis, that the attack would be nuclear. So, you know, you can sort of see it both ways. If you're Khrushchev and you get this from Castro in this incredibly tense moment, and he seems to you to be wanting to fight the Americans and to use our nuclear weapons to fight the Americans, to Khrushchev, what this proves is that Castro doesn't understand squat, anything about what the weapons are about. He actually thinks that we should use them. Khrushchev knows, Castro doesn't, or he doesn't sort of put it together this way. If we attack the United States with nuclear weapons, they, having roughly 17 times as many nuclear weapons as we do, they will destroy the Soviet Union, they'll destroy the Soviet Empire, they'll destroy everything that we think we're fighting for. And this is an ally? He's crazy. He's lost his mind. But what if you're Castro? What if you're about to go under? What if you're a Cuban citizen and you think, you know, the gringos are finally going to do it. They're going to sink our island beneath the Caribbean Sea. And we can't do anything about it. Well, what we can do is to request of our patron that if this happens, when this happens, Saturday night, 27 October 1962, in Cuba, it seemed like when it will happen. Take as many of the Americans with you as you can. In fact, take all of the Americans with you. Cubans will die. In fact, the entire nation of Cuba will cease to exist. But it'll have been for a cause. Cuba will have been the cause that sent the United States of America, the enemy of Cuba, into non-existence, and it will also signify the triumph of the socialist revolution, and Cuba will posthumously, as it were, get credit for it. In that sense, I think you and I both believe that this is a rare instance, possibly a unique instance, of a suicide note. We would call it that. A suicide note written by a leader for his entire country.
Well, I think it is. But one of the implications that Khrushchev sees, and apparently Castro doesn't, is that it's a suicide note not just for Cuba and not just for the U.S. It's a suicide note for planet Earth.
And you're saying that Khrushchev...
That's Khrushchev's mind, right, because he understands that it's not a matter of hermetically sealing the nuclear attack with the U.S., and that's it, we're done, and yoo-hoo, we won. As bad as that might be for all the deaths you cause. But in fact, there'd be retaliation, and the world is gone. So it is really an extraordinary suicide note. Castro doesn't have that viewpoint at all at this point. It takes him literally decades and decades to evolve to that point. At our conference in Havana, when we met for 4 days with Fidel, he reiterated exactly his sentiments of 1962. They were the same. And it really wasn't until 2010 that he evolved. And we'll get into that, Castro's evolution from nuke them, Nikita, to let's get rid of the nukes, which is a phenomenal evolution.
You know, the question of whether Khrushchev is right reacting as if Castro is crazy or if there's a sort of rationality underlying his response, which is, in his view, I have to make a choice. I have only this one choice, two options. We can go down and it'll just be meaningless, or we can go down and it'll be for the cause. Before we jump to the conclusion, and we'll deal with this at greater length in other podcasts, but before we jump to the conclusion that Fidel was a nutcase and that he had somehow, you know, lost it, he'd been up too late, or, you know, he was young and he was all these kind of things, let's think about the Alamo. Let's think about Masada. Let's think about any bravery demonstrated either in battle or in some other way when maybe your life was on the line. And instead of capitulating, people fight to the death, and that's not always considered crazy. In fact, there's another name for it. It's called heroism. It's called heroic, or being a hero, doing what is very difficult but necessary under the circumstances when your back is to the wall.
Well, even in a sort of very different context, Jim, why not see if you can paint the picture of the ending of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid?
All right. One of our favorite movies, not only but partially because the two leading characters, Butch Cassidy, played by Paul Newman, The Sundance Kid by Robert Redford, a young Paul Newman and a young Robert Redford, handsome as anything. They're trapped in a hut in Bolivia, and they've been chased all the way across the country. And,
they're thieves, by the way. Yeah. These are not heroic people.
They have no redeeming social value. I mean, there's no pretext here. They're crooks. But they're trapped. And they know they're trapped. They're bleeding. They're just in bad shape. And they smile at each other. They grab their guns, or they try to put their guns or their hands around the guns. And they come ripping out of that hut. And as they come out of the hut, they smile at each other. And hundreds of Bolivian military just shoot the crap out of them. They are just dead meat. But what you actually see is the freeze frame going to a kind of brown out into black and white, and the credits roll. And I think George Roy Hill, the director of that film, meant for you to conclude, these guys, despite everything else, they died a heroic death. I defy anybody to watch the movie and not get that out of the movie at the end. So we have some kind of up-close and reasonably personal evidence that even North Americans like George Roy Hill, even those of us who have never been guerrilla fighters as Castro was, who have never been threatened by the most powerful nation that ever existed like Castro was, even we understand that if your back is really to the wall, you might have to make some choices that would seem absolutely unbelievably irrational in other more normal non-crisis situations. Visit us regularly for more in the podcast series, as well as news about our new book, The Armageddon Letters, short films, graphic novels, and blogs by our three leaders. And don't forget to visit us at facebook.com/Armageddon Letters. I'm Jim Blight.
And I'm Janet Lang. Until we meet again.